My voice is back, but I'm not entirely back, so I'm going to keep this up here. There are those who would argue that I'm not all there on my best day. Most scholars agree that this particular story did not appear in the original Gospel of John. It's an addition. That's for a couple of reasons. It doesn't really fit with the other resurrection stories in John very well. And at the end of last week's reading, it was so clearly the ending of the gospel that a lot of scholars think, well, this was added on at a later time. Do you know what? I'm so glad somebody remembered this story. And I'm so glad, whether it was John or somebody else, that they put it on the end, after the end of the story, because without it, I don't think the Gospel of John would be complete. And hopefully you'll learn why I say that as we go along. The followers of Jesus, having encountered him in Jerusalem while in hiding, now have gone back to the land they know, Galilee. They've gone back to the life they knew before they met Jesus, fishing. At least four of those were fishing as a profession when Jesus called them away from it. They're at a loss, and Peter does the only thing that he knows how to do and do well: fish. He says, I'm going fishing. Who's with me? So they all go out, and they fish through the night. And interestingly enough, even though these are professionals, they don't catch a thing. An epic failure for a group of professional fishers. Just as the dawn is coming, they look toward the shore, and on the shore they see a stranger, a figure they don't recognize. The figure calls out to them some advice. Throw the net out on the other side, on the right side. You'll get more fish than you can handle. And they do, and they do. They get so many fish, they can't even pull them into the boat. Well, recognizing who this is who's giving the advice, the disciple whom Jesus loved, who in the Gospel of John is identified, of course, as John. If it had been the Gospel of Michael, it would have been identified as Michael, of course. Jesus likes me best. He loves you all, but he likes me best, right? So the disciple whom Jesus loved says, it's the Lord. And on the basis of that, impetuous Peter puts on his clothes. It's a little counterintuitive, I know. He's been fishing without clothes on, which makes sense. But he puts on his clothes to jump in the water and swim to shore. If it just happens to be the Lord, and if the disciple whom Jesus likes best is right, you don't want to meet him without your clothes on. Well, they all get to shore, and sure enough, there are so many fish that they have to drag them. They can't get them into the boat. They drag them through the water until they arrive. As they get closer, they can smell the aroma of cooking fish. And they've been fishing all night, and they're hungry, and they've been working hard, even though they haven't brought anything in until the last minute. And Jesus has loaves of bread, and he has fish. Remind you of any other story? The feeding of the multitudes, right? Always, Jesus is feeding people. He's got his fish, he's got his loaves. He takes some of their fish and adds them to the grill. He says, come and eat. This is what Jesus does. He creates community around food, and we, thank God, as United Methodists, have kept that tradition going. When they finally finish eating, Jesus directs the conversation to Peter. Now, for a professional fisherman to fish all night and not catch anything is an epic failure, right? But I don't think that's the failure that Peter has been thinking about, because Peter has a prior epic failure. We read about that during Holy Week. When Jesus was arrested and taken for trial, Peter is in the courtyard where Jesus is being held. He's around a small campfire. He says something, and his accent gives him away. They know where he's from. Did you ever have that happen? They say, you're a Galilean. You must be one of his followers. Well, he could have said, well, I'm not exactly a follower, but I know who the guy is. He could have hedged his bets, but Peter doesn't do that. He says, I don't know him. He says it three times. I don't know this guy. He's afraid. He fears that they'll do to him what they're about to do to Jesus, and he doesn't want any part of that. After all, his whole idea of who Jesus is has fallen apart. In some ways, he really doesn't know Jesus because he thought he was going to drive the Romans out. He thought he was going to set up a new rule, and now he's on trial like a criminal. This Jesus, not the one he expected. Epic failure. This was the man who was supposed to lead the movement. He was nicknamed Rock, Petros, Peter. And when the crunch came, the rock crumbled and turned to sand. Epic failure. And so now he's face to face with the very person whom he failed. And Jesus asks him, Simon, son of John, see, he's not the rock anymore. He's back to his original name, the name he had before Jesus called him. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And the word Jesus uses here is the Greek word for the love that God has for us. It's a form of agapeo, or agape. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Simon answers, maybe hesitatingly, yes, Lord, I love you. He doesn't say, even though I deny knowing you, I love you. And as soon as he says that, Jesus gives him his assignment. Feed my sheep. And then I imagine there's a pause. Peter's waiting for the next word. But what comes is the same question again. Jesus asks, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Using again that word for the love God has for human beings. Peter's a little defensive at this point. Didn't he believe me the first time? Did he think I was lying just because I denied him? Yes, Lord, I love you, he says. And so Jesus gives him a variation of his assignment. Tend my lambs, he says. And so Simon's waiting again in the silence for what's coming next. And what comes next is the same question again. Simon, son of John, he's not Peter yet. Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter, in a nutshell, states all of John's theology, which is why this passage fits so well. He says, Lord, you know everything. That's the way John understands Jesus. You know everything. You would know if I was lying to you. You know I love you. This time when Jesus asks about love, though, he doesn't use that word for the love that God has for humans. He uses a form of phileo, the love we have for each other, that siblings and friends have for each other. Do you love me like a brother? Do you love me like a friend? And when Peter answers yes, Jesus repeats the first assignment, then feed my sheep. You know, baseball season has just begun. Some of you are aware of that, I'm sure. And in baseball, when you come up to the plate, how many strikes do you get? Three, right, you know that. Three strikes, you're out, right? You know, we've even applied that to the criminal justice system in the past however many years. Three strikes, you're in the prison. You are out of society. Three strikes, you're out. which has not been a very good strategy for us, because right now the United States incarcerates a higher percentage of its population and more people than any other country in the world. But what Jesus is doing in this story is retelling Peter's story. Peter hasn't made an epic fail. He has denied knowing the man he promised he would never leave, desert, or deny. He's done all of those. Three times he denied him. Three strikes he should be out. But that's not the way Jesus works. No, Jesus comes to him, and because he's denied him three times, Jesus asks, "Do you love me?" three times. Three strikes and you're in is the story that Jesus is telling. Unless you have made some kind of epic failure in your life, you're not ready for Jesus. Jesus comes to us not when we have been successful, not when we're at the top of our game, not when we're at the front of the line, but when disaster has struck. When we have failed or someone has failed us, then we're ready for Jesus. And he always comes with the same question, "Do you love me?" And even if we say it hesitatingly, "Yeah, I know I haven't represented you very well, but yeah, I do love you. Yeah, I know I didn't understand that passage, or I didn't live up to all that I understood, but yes, I do love you." And he gives us the assignment again. Same assignment: feed my sheep, tend my lambs. And unless we have experienced that kind of epic failure, we don't understand what's being offered us, and we are not able to receive it with open arms. I had a very important teacher in high school who told me that when he was a high school student, he failed a class. He said, "I think every teacher ought to have failed a class, ought to know what it's like to sit in a classroom and really try and not get what the teacher is talking about." He said, "Only then can you have compassion for and sympathy for the student in your classroom who just doesn't get it, who may be trying, but just doesn't get it." Had a close friend at the General Board of Discipleship when I was working there. This was long before our girls were of any age for her comments to really touch me deeply, but they came in handy later on, let me tell you. She had a daughter who was about to become a teenager. And she sat down with her daughter and she said, "You know, when you get to be a teenager, we're probably going to have more arguments than we do already. And we're probably going to say some things we wish we hadn't said. And at some point, you may even tell me you hate me. And when you do, I just want you to know, I'm not going to believe you." I think that's what Jesus had in mind. He said to Peter, "You're going to deny me three times." Peter said, "Oh no, I would never do that." Jesus says, "You're going to deny me three times. And when you do, I'm not going to believe you. They're going to believe you, but I'm not going to believe you, because I know somewhere underneath all that you love me, and I'm going to come to you, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to tell me so." And that's what this story is about. It's why the gospel wouldn't be complete without it. Immediately following this story, Jesus describes to Peter some of the things that are going to come about because he's chosen to be a follower of Jesus again. When he was younger, he could do whatever he wanted. He could fish when he wanted. He could go where he wanted. He could do what he wanted. But now, and in the coming years, he was going to be led places he never expected to go. He was going to be led some places he didn't want to go. And ultimately, the writer says, he's going to be led to a death he never expected. A lot of us experience that in time, don't we? Winding up in places we didn't intend to go. Having experiences we didn't intend to have. But sometimes we've grown from those. At the beginning of the service, Neil announced that we're going to be having some transitions here. Transitions always make people nervous. You know, we as United Methodist clergy sign up to go places and be sent places we never knew we wanted to go. That's about as nicely as I can put it. And you sign up to receive people you never knew you wanted. You didn't know you wanted me, did you? In fact, I had at least one strike against me. I was a member of the Tennessee Conference. But see, it builds character, doesn't it? We've had a good time together, and we continue to have a good time together. So we're looking at some transition. Now, you're going to have me inflicted on you for another year, so just get used to it. But, as you heard, Nancy is going to be making a transition to three-quarter time as the campus minister at United Methodist Campus Minister at Vanderbilt University. A quarter of her time will be spent here. She'll still be doing our student ministry, not just for Vanderbilt students, but for all students, and some young adult ministry here that's become very, very important for us across these recent years. But we are going to be able to be her home base while she reaches out across the street. She'll essentially be our missionary to Vanderbilt. But she will still have her feet planted here, and we are so glad that she will. Now, she didn't expect that when it came up, but that's what we sign on for. Coming to us is Chris Alley. Chris is a young pastor in the Tennessee Conference. He has served this past year at Tulip Street United Methodist Church. I think he's going to find this staff and this congregation a wonderfully fruitful place to serve. I think it will give him an opportunity to share the gifts that he has and to grow in those gifts. And he'll have the additional advantage of having the person who just preceded him in the position right here. So if he has questions, he can ask Nancy. That's what I'm going to say whenever he asks me a question, Nancy. I'm going to say, you need to ask Nancy. So we are going to have some transitions. These will take place at the end of June, beginning of July. But you know what? When you sign up to follow Jesus, you just never know where God is going to lead you. This coming weekend, we have an opportunity to come here and in a safe environment as families, if we choose, to encounter and experience something of the witness of persons who experience homelessness, persons who are refugees. Often we're afraid to approach homeless folks. They always want something, and we don't know how to respond. We're afraid to approach refugees. We don't speak their language. We don't know how to respond. But we never know when God is going to call us out into the street to feed Jesus' homeless sheep, to tend Jesus' refugee lambs. And this coming weekend, you're going to have an opportunity to come to the church and in a safe environment on the four-story theater to walk through that story, to prepare yourself for that time when God does call you to be out in the street tending Jesus' lambs, feeding Jesus' sheep. So let me encourage you, if at all possible, to make a time to come and walk through that. In a way, that's what our ministry is about, preparing us here so we can reach out there. It's not enough if it stays here, because Jesus said, feed all my sheep, all my lambs. And that's what we're called to do as well. So you know, it doesn't matter how many times you've experienced epic failure. In fact, that's been your preparation to receive Jesus and what he has to give. Without that epic failure, we think we can do it on our own. We think we're pretty capable and pretty confident and pretty confident. And when that epic fail comes, we yearn for somebody to come and ask us, do you love me? And then tell us what to do about it. Well, Jesus is that person. And it doesn't matter how many times. It's not just three. 70 times seven. All the epic fails that we can create, Jesus can respond to, and the question is always the same. Do you love me? Do you love me like God loves you? Do you love me like God calls us to love our neighbor? That's the question. And we know the answer, don't we? Yes, Lord, I love you. Even if we say it hesitantly, even if we preface it in our own mind by saying, even though I fail so often, yes, I love you. And then the assignment is always the same. Feed my sheep. Tend my lambs. Feed all my sheep. Every single time. Thanks be to God.